So please welcome Dean Thompson.
Yeah, they're right next to each other. There's an old Calvin and Hobbes cartoon that starts out with Calvin saying, "Hey, let's go find a big poisonous snake." And Hobbes says, "Well, what are we going to do when we find one?" And Calvin's like, "Are you serious? We'll scare ourselves silly, run around in circles, screaming like a bunch of loons." And Hobbes says, "I look forward to when we're old enough to getting our morning jolt from coffee." And Calvin's like, "I bet that wears off a lot quicker." I think of that cartoon fairly often when I'm out walking in wild areas. And I've spent a fair amount of time walking in wild areas. I have 35 years of being a naturalist and a wildlife biologist. I've done a lot of walking in on the wild side, so to speak. And sometimes I think walking just isn't enough. You got to go further. You want to kind of kick it up a notch. You want to push yourself to, you want to get that jolt from when you push yourself or encountering the unexpected. That's kind of what you, well, at least for me, that's what I want to do, okay? I remember one time being in southeastern Arizona, and I was walking with my wife and a friend of mine named JR, and we decided that we wanted to look for coral snakes. And coral snakes are a highly venomous snake that are found in that area. And you can find them like under rocks and under pieces of wood and stuff. And so we're walking along, and JR was up ahead of us a little ways. And he lifts up this piece of wood. And as soon as he looks under this wood, he just drops it and spins around and starts running back the way we came. And as he sprints past us, he yells over his shoulder. He's like, "Bees!" And we... And that left Stacy and I standing there having to process his actions and his words and say, "Oh, we better run too before we're engulfed by a swarm of angry insects." So that was kind of a good jolt back then. And when I go walking, sometimes with my family, a lot of times they'll ask me, they say, "Are we walking or are we going to be doing any bushwhacking? Because if we're bushwhacking, you can just go by yourself because that's not what we're up for." But I think it's when you're walking, you get to those places where it says the trail ends, at the end of the trail. When you go past that, that's when the adventure starts. That's when you get into that magical area where memories and stories are made. Okay, and I think that's why my first 4 years after I graduated from college were so prolific for me, because I worked as a field biologist, a wildlife biologist up in the Sierra and Arizona, Wyoming, all over the West. And I just remember the Sierras being such a fantastic time. My field partner, John Ball, and I would start in the foothills in the springtime, and especially after El Nino winters when the rivers were raging and the waterfalls were flowing and the hills were filled with flowers and green, like it is. This year is going to be fantastic. But we would just wait for the snow to melt. And as the snow would melt, we would just follow springtime up the mountain and just go higher and higher. And we'd walk through forest and scramble around on granite cliffs and wade or swim naked through mountain rivers with our gear held above our head. And then we get to the other side of the river and we sit there on a fat slab of granite in the sun and shiver and just dry off. I mean, it was just shining times being up there. Sometimes we would get flown by helicopter into wilderness backcountry areas, and they drop us off on a gravel bar with our gear, and then the helicopter pilot would say, "Okay, be here in 2 weeks. We'll see you later," and he'd fly off. And then we would get a base camp, and we would do our raptor surveys or our biological surveys when we were up there. And it was a really fun time. And when I think back on that, sometimes I think we probably should have used the buddy system more often and stuck together. Would have been smarter and safer, but we figured we could cover more ground when we split up. And keep in mind, we had no cell phones, no GPS, no radios even to contact each other. It was just us, our binoculars, topo maps, compasses, and journals, and we just wander. And there'd be times we'd be sitting around in the morning, drinking coffee by the fire, looking at a topo map and go, "Okay, you're going to go here, all right, and I'm going to go up this drainage right here, all right, and we'll go there. And then remember that ledge we saw yesterday where there was a funky little pine tree? Okay, we'll meet there for lunch between 12 and 1. We'll just see you then. All right, and then we'd take off and just wander up drainages or cruise along on ridges. And there's just a variety of thoughts that just go through your mind when you're wandering by yourself through these wild areas, thoughts of joy and wonder and an intense feeling of alertness and being alive. But there's always this little kernel of thought, this doubt right in the back of your head that every once in a while will rush forward and go, whoa, Dean, are you fucking up right now? And it's like, I don't know. Wait, what? Am I fucking up? Am I blowing? Should I be scrambling up this narrow ridge where if one wrong step will result in blood or broken bones? I don't know. No, I think I'm okay. I think I'm good. Okay, I can keep doing this. I'm good. And it's just, you have to kind of just go with it sometimes. Kind of lost track of what I was talking about right then. There was a time I was in Tehiptie Valley, and I wanted to cross the Middle Fork of the Kings River, and it was swollen with snowmelt at the time, and it was rushing river, and there was no way I was going to wade or swim across it, and so I had to find a way to get across it, and there was a tree that had fallen during the winter time, obviously fallen during the winter, it still had a lot of branches on it. And so I figured to make a good bridge. And so I was going across this bridge and kind of working my way around branches as I'm going across. And it was a little dicey and a little thought, Dean, are you effing up right now? It's like, no, I'm good. I can keep going. And I just grabbed the branch and kind of go around. And it was like about 8-10 feet above the water as I was going across. And I got about 3/4 of the way across when there was this little branch, and it was like not very big, but it was right in the middle, and it looked like one good swing with my walking stick would take it out. But as soon as I swung, as soon as I hit that stick, I realized that it was a lot stronger and more limber than I bargained for, and the thing just whipped right back and lashed me across the cheek and barely missing my eye, causing me to stagger. I ended up grabbing that little stick. It turned out it was strong enough to hold me, and I was able to get around it, and I just got as quick as I could back to the other side of the river, and I sat there. My legs were shaking. My heart was pounding. I had blood dripping down my cheek from where the stick hit me, and by the time I got back to camp, it had scabbed over, and all my field partners were there. They're like, dude, what happened to you? What? And I was like, oh, I was just walking. I just hit a branch, that's all, no big deal. And they're like, man, that scab, that makes you look really badass, you know? But as wild as the Sierra and those times I spent being a field biologist up in all those other areas were, they kind of pale in comparison to the wildness and the remoteness that my wife and I encountered when we took a trip down the Green River in Utah. And the two of us, along with another couple, JR and his wife, took 10 days, and we took our canoes, and we canoed 120 miles down through Labyrinth Canyon and Stillwater Canyon through Canyonlands National Park to the confluence of the Colorado River. And it's a trip that is just, it's fantastic, and take it. I mean, if you can do it, do it. And if you talk to me later, if you want to take it, it's a fantastic trip. Never have I experienced such a beauty, such stillness, remoteness, especially in some of those sandstone side canyons where you go up in these canyons and the silence is almost painfully deafening. And where just the sound of a dove's wings high up in an alcove somewhere are so startling but so welcome to be heard, just to break that silence. And then there's just the rhythm of life on the river, of day after day, packing your stuff, you know, getting in the canoe, drifting with the current, wondering what's around the next bend, and watching as walls of rock rise slow, higher and higher, and change color with each different formation, or where the sun is as it tracks across the sky. It's a trip that is etched in my memory. And did I say I'd recommend it to any? Yeah, do it. Okay, it's great. What I wouldn't recommend are the actions that JR and I did on one of the last few days of that river trip. And we had just finished exploring some Anasazi ruins, granaries, and we were walking back to our canoes. We were by the river, and we came across a sandy area where we found these tracks, and they were tracks made by a mountain lion. And it is obvious that the lion had made a kill, and the cat was dragging this body between its paws as it was walking towards the river. And JR and I were kind of curious about this. We're both wildlife biologists, kind of curious about this. And despite our wives telling us we're stupid and we shouldn't do this, we wanted to follow the tracks. So we did, and they stayed behind. We followed the tracks as they wound closer and closer to the river. And soon we're walking around where we're walking through cottonwoods, large cottonwoods. And we're looking up in the trees, and we're looking at our back trail. And we're walking a little bit further. We're looking at each other, and we're both looking at each other. Are we fucking up right now? I think we're okay. We figured the cat had already made a kill, right? It had already eaten, so it's full, right? So we're not on the menu. That was our reasoning, so we kept going. We worked our way around the brush, and then soon we saw that the tracks kind of went into this really dense thicket of salt cedar. And if we wanted to go any further, it would require us to kind of hunch down almost on our hands and knees and kind of shuffle along in order to see where the tracks went. So we did, and we got a little bit further, but we didn't go too far into that salt cedar because soon we saw up ahead of us there was a mound of debris that had been like pushed up by the animal, and sticking out of this mound of debris was a leg of a deer and some tines of an antler. And the cat had buried the prey item there. It was like, okay, all right, we saw it, we're good, it's a deer, great, we're fine. Our curiosity was satisfied, and so we beat a hasty retreat out of there. And no doubt there was probably a pair of yellow eyes watching us from the shade or up in a tree somewhere as we got out of there. And that was something that stuck in our brain. It was a good memory, a good story, and it was a really energizing moment that definitely lasted longer than a cup of coffee. Thank you.